Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of 40K. With me is my co-host, Don.
Hello there.
And back from assignment, we have Ray back in the house.
Hello, all.
We had a very busy weekend in the tournament scene, so we're going to get right into it. Not one, not two, but seven GT-level events over the past weekend. I'm trying to think of which Chaos God has number seven as their specific number.
Nurgle.
Well, good news, none of us are sick, so let's move on from there. So, very active week. We're going to start our first event in British Columbia. This was the Attack X 40K event. Looking at their top eight, looks something like this. In eighth place, David Burton with Thousand Suns. Seventh place, Shane Mitchell with Astra Militarum. Sixth place, Gary Sacco with Imperial Knights. Fifth place, there's actually a tie for fourth place. That's what threw me off. Jim Vessel with Chaos Space Marines, as well as Rupert Campbell with Inari. In third place, we have Darren Jack with Tyranids. Second place, Kevin Cuccino with Death Guard. And your number one player for the TACX 2018 event, Alex McDougall with High Fleet Kraken. So before we get into Alex's list, it's a very odd top eight. Not a lot of armies we've seen up there in quite some time.
I got one or two that you kind of expect right now in the top eight.
We got Anari, you got Imperial Guard, but we have two Tyranids in the top three, which I was like, okay. I was seeing the return of Astra Militarum. I mean, there's a lot of guard detachments, but usually it's the bare minimum to get the command farm, not actually the primary army. So, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I could be wrong.
I wonder what Devin Crucio is running.
We'll get there in a second. Let's look at Alex McDougall first here, being he won the event. And very nice. He's a very nice Battlescribe version. So he starts with High Fleet Kraken. He's got a Hive Tyrant and a Swarm Lord in the HQ choice, followed by two rather large blobs of Gene Stealers, one unit of 20, another unit of 16, followed by a unit of 24 Harmagons. Then comes in with a Gene Stealer Cult Battalion, a Magus, a Primus, 10 Neophyte Hybrids, three unit of 10 Neophyte Hybrids, and another unit of 20 Pierce Stream Gene Stealers. That's easy for me to say. Follows that up with a Spearhead Detachment of Astra Militarum. He's got Tank Commander, a Platoon Commander, as well as 1, 2, 3 heavy weapon teams of 3 mortars each.
It's pretty much what I'd expect from the average Gene Stealer Cult army now, where they have to ally in either Astra Militarum or Tyranids to do what they're hoping to do until their book comes out. And you can't go wrong with that many Gene Stealer attacks, assuming the terrain's appropriate. So hopefully they had a good setup on tables and whatnot.
I'm surprised they didn't go with those hammer guys from the Gene Stealer cult codex index. So maybe it's just waiting for the codex to come out with the upgraded version.
The Aberrants were never really hugely popular. It doesn't help that the only way, as of now, there's two ways to get it. That's the old Death Watch Overkill, which is out of print. And then there's the Tooth and Claw. And there's plenty of people who aren't interested in buying a big box, or even splitting a whole big box just for a few models.
Good point. All right. Let's move on to Kevin's list. He came in second with Death Guard. Take a look at what he's got there. He starts off with a battalion of Chaos Demons. It starts out with a Demon Prince and a Poxbringer. Yes, it is a Demon Prince is got a Demon Axe and Skull Reaver, so he's there to just chop up some knights. Then follows it up with a unit of 30 Bloodletters and then two units of 28 Plaguebearers. Then goes to a Spearhead Detachment of Death Guard. He's got a Chaos Lord, a Foul Blight Spawn, And then 1-2 Plague Burst Crawlers is what I'm trying to say. And 2 Hellforged Leviathan Dreadnoughts. Hey, we were just talking about them. Yeah, he took the Butcher Cannon Array twice and 2 Hellflamers on each. And that is the list.
That sounds very interesting. But I'm fairly certain that it was the whole idea of, yeah, the two squads of, or bricks rather, of Plague Bearers that are screening out that Skull Reaver Demon Prince. And those Demon Princes are no joke. That Skull Reaver, they will kill pretty much anything that they touch. So that's probably what did a large amount of the lifting. Other than that, the twin set of Butcher Cannon Arrays actually does a fair amount of damage. And the Chaos version, compared to the Storm Cannon Array, is 12 inches longer. So it just allows you to get to hit what you need to hit. And those things are still fairly durable, too.
I was just about to ask you, what is the range on the Butcher Cannon? Because I didn't think he would have enough range to get over his own screen.
The Storm Cannon Array, the Imperial version, is 2 feet, whereas the Butcher Cannon Array, while it has less shots, is 1 strength higher, 1 less AP, and has 3-foot range.
Yeah, so that would be far enough. Okay. Interesting indeed. So, and this is another quick look here. Darren Jack came in third with Tyranids as well. Take a look at his list. High Fleet Leviathan is in the first battalion. Its two choices include a Malanthrope and a Neurothrope, then rounds it out with 3 units of 30 Termagants, 3 Zoanthropes, and a Myoptic Spore unit of 7, then brings in a second battalion of Tyranids. They're High Fleet Kronos with 2 Neurothropes, 3 Ripper Swarms, and a Hive Guard of 6 Hive Guards with Impaler Cannons. Then he wraps it up with a battalion for Gene Stealer Cults, 2 Magus, and 3 unit of 10 Neophyte Hybrids.
That sounds actually pretty awesome. I think that the only game that he did not win, which was actually just a tie, it looks like he was playing against a Drukhari player. So maybe he just didn't have enough DACA to get through what the Drukhari could do. Or maybe the Agents of X came into play.
So let's take a look. That's JT McDowell, who was 2 years ago won the top 5 Drukhari players. Back then it was Dark Eldar. And he ran Cabal, the Black Art Battalion, 2 Archons, 3 unit of 5 warriors, all with blasters, 2 Ravagers with Disintegrator Cannons, a Razor Wing, 2 unit of Scourges with Haywire Blasters, 4 Venoms, 2 Raiders, then a Prophets of the Flesh Battalion with 2 Homoculus and 3 units of 5 Racks, and then an Alatok Battalion with a Farseer Skyrunner, Warlock Skyrunner, and 3 units of 5 Rangers. I'm actually surprised he tied this.
He might have also had the first turn Alpha Strike, because he'd probably destroy the Flying Hive Tyrants and whatnot with all the poison and whatnot that they have. But yeah, it might have just been technical game, or who knows, maybe they both timed up, because to be fair, shooting at Plague Bearers, it takes a long time for them to roll their saves.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just thinking, being High Fleet Kronos would have been able to shut down the only 2 Psychers he's got, and that's pretty much your Doom and Guide and Doom and is it Hex? Jinx, that's what I'm thinking of. Reduce the save.
Yeah.
So that is your event Attack X. We're going to go a little further south, back into the United States, to St. Petersburg, Florida, for DACAGON, which is just fun to say. I love that name. And a lot of the familiar names from the Florida meta made that out for this particular game. So your top 8 for DACAGON is like so. David Ozawa with Space Wolves. Number 7, Jeff Beery with Drukhari. Number 6, Ruben Fernandez with Drukhari. 5th place, Richard Siegler with Tau. 4th place, friend of the show, Aurelio Carrera with Imperial Knights. 3rd place, Regino Sanchez with Cult Mechanicus. 2nd place, Lance Naumann with Drukhari. And your winner, who we've talked about previously on the show, is none other than John Lennon with Harlequins. So we took a quick list at this list before the show, and it's not so much he's playing Harlequins, he's playing bikes. So he starts off with a Latak Battalion, Farseer, Skyrunner, Warlock Skyrunner, 3 units of 5 Rangers. then comes in with a Soaring Spite Outrider detachment, with includes a Shadow Seer, two units of six Sky Weavers, all with Haywire Cannons, and five Zephyr Glaives and a Star Bola, and then another unit of two Sky Weavers with Haywire Cannons and Zephyr Glaives. Rounds it out with a Prophets of the Flesh Battalion, Yurian Rakath, Homoculus, three units of five Rax, and two units of seven Grotesques.
That is a lot of threat on turn one. Well, maybe not turn one, probably turn two. Because you get the bikes that can do the advance and charge thing. You have, judging by how many Talos that there are, or not Talos, Grotesques that there are, they're both in the Webway, so they're both teleporting in. So yeah, that's just a lot of four bimbles you have to deal with.
Yeah, there's a ton of it on the table. And it was Soaring Spite, so he can advance and charge and not be affected by... does not affect his shooting at all. So, getting upfield rather quickly. Lance Newman came in second with Drukhari. Took a quick look at that list. Or if we had him on Electron Microscope. Sorry, Lance, we're going to have to skip that list this week. Somehow he managed to get six pages onto one sheet landscape style. So, a little hard to read. Third place was Regino Sanchez with Cult Mechanicus. Now, there's a faction we haven't heard of in a long time in the top eight. Let's take a look what he brought. Starts with the Battalion. Stygies 8 Forge World. Neat. Two Tech Priest Engine Seers. Three units of... I think that's four, six... Sorry, guys. Four units of six Skitarii Rangers. Here we go. The old-fashioned two units of 20 Fulgurite Electro Priests is what I was trying to say. Three units of Stygian Dragoons with Taser Lances. Take that back. He took four of them. There's another one sneaking on the other page. He then rounds it out with another battalion of Blood Angels. He's got two Smash Captains and three units of Scouts. Then rounds it out with Astra Militarum. Looks like it's your standard CP farm of two commanders and three units of 10 guardsmen.
So for all those people that say Alpha Strike is dead, this is the antithesis of why it is not. everything in here can turn one charge. Easily.
Easily. So yeah, this one of those, you kind of go, yep, it's in your face. And by the way, if he kills you before you kill it, they get, what, a 3+ invul?
Yeah. 3+ invul on toughness 3 dudes with 5 up feeling pain. That if they roll 6s to wound you, do D3 mortal wounds instead of D3 damage.
Just not nice. At
2 text piece.
All right, so we move from St. Petersburg, Florida, a little bit to the west, to Alabama. Not sure where. Dotham, Alabama. I'm not sure where that is, but I'm sure it's lovely this time of year. For the Warzone, Come the Apocalypse GT. And a couple other famous names from the Southeast meta. We'll start with your top eight here. Jeff Bodine with Ultramarines. Seventh place, Austin Burrow with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, Paul Wilkins with Nurgle Demons. Fifth place, Anthony Hinkle with Nurgle Demons. Fourth place, Chris Taylor with Prophets of the Flesh. Third place with Drukhari is Jason Watts. Second place with Imperial Knights is Andrew Ford. And in first place, well, we haven't heard from this guy in quite some time, playing Harlequins, Carter Leach. So Carter Leach actually was like the king of Corsairs for the longest time. Taking a look at his list, it's a wall of text. It should be fun to read. Starts with the Outrider Detachment of Harlequins of the Dreaming Shadows. Shadow Seer with a Neurodisruptor and Shards of Light, as well as one unit of five Skyweavers with Haywire Cannons and then two units of four with Skyweavers. Second Battalion, Cabal of the Black Heart, two Archons, three Cabalite Warriors with Splinter Rifles and Phantasm Grenade Launchers. A unit of, wow, nine Mandrakes. two Ravagers, each with disintegrator cannons, two Venoms with double splinter cannons, and finally rounds it out with a Craft World battalion of Ulathae, featuring Eldrad, a Warlock Skyrunner, and three unit of five Rangers.
I see what he's doing there.
What's he doing?
The leadership bomb. Phantasmal grenade launcher, shards of light, all this stuff points to reducing the leadership down to like -8, I think they can get down to. Only thing I didn't hear in there was the Hemlock Wraith Fighter.
Yeah, I didn't see that, and then or the Covens that can do it as well.
Got that, you got a Phantasmal grenade launcher, and then just psych power to reduce it by another bit. It does actually work when you get all those stacking debuffs on leadership.
I'm curious once you get all those debuffs, but it's interesting, does he have enough firepower to actually force you to make saves or make morale tests?
Yeah, well, with Craft Worlds, when you're rerolling all failed wounds on something, probably.
Probably, but yeah. Like I said, I'm surprised the Hemlock's not in there. So, interesting list. Let's move on to Andrew Ford, Imperial Knights. Starts off with a battalion of Astra Militarum. Surprise, surprise. And that features two company commanders and three units of guardsmen. Then moves on to a super heavy auxiliary detachment, House Raven. Looks like a Lord Castellan. And then a super heavy detachment of House Terran, featuring a Cerastus Knight Lancer, Knight Gallant, and another Knight Gallant. Looking at lots of war gear here. Cerastus Knight has the Shock Lance and made him a character, which I think is standard. Knight Gallant has the Heavy Stubber, Reaper Chainsword, and Thunderstrike Gauntlet. And the other Knight Gallant is a character from the Exalted Court and gave him the Heirloom Sanctuary. He's got a Meltagun, Reaper Chainsword, Thunderstrike Gauntlet as well. And he has the Landstrider Warlord trait.
I would have expected him to have given the Landstrider Knight the 2+ armor save instead of the 4+ symbol.
Might be a meta choice.
Yeah.
And in third place was Jason Watts with Jukari. Take a quick look at his list. Starts out with Battalion Cabal of the Black Art. Two Archons, three units of five Cavalite Warriors with blasters. Three Ravagers, all with... Two of them with Disintegrator Cannons, one with the Dark Lances. And a Razorwing Jet Fighter, as well as three Raiders and two Venoms. Then rounds it out with a Cult of the Cursed Blade detachment, two Succubus, one with Archite Glaive and a Blast Pistol, the other one with Hydra Gauntlets. I haven't seen those in a while. It's got two units of 10 witches and one unit of 5 witches. Interesting. One has the Hydra Gauntlets, one has Razor Flails, and the smaller unit is the one with the Chardonnette and an Impaler. Then adds a unit of Scourges with... Interesting. Four Shredders. And then he rounds it out with a Spearhead Detachments from the Prophets of the Flesh, the regular Homoculus, and then three solo units of Talos.
It's confusing.
Yeah, I don't get it, to be honest with you. He's got a little bit of everything, but I don't think he's got enough of anything to do anything, so I'm not sure how he got into third place. Because 10 witches die to a stiff breeze, and then the ones that have it aren't really going to hold anything in place.
He might have just got lucky.
It's hard
sometimes
to get...
the right draw does it for you. Yeah.
Single Talos units usually die pretty quick. Plus, you really can't get the most mileage out of your stratagems with those. And then, I know the Triple Ravager is really popular, but it really doesn't do a whole lot. So, same thing with the single blasters and Venoms. I don't know. He must do better. He did better than I did this weekend, so he must know something I don't know. But anyway, that is your Warzone Come to the Apocalypse events. So we've covered three events so far, four more to go. We'll be right back after the break to talk about the other four events from this past weekend.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do Fantasy combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Beau at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. Again, a very busy weekend in the world of tournament play. Continue with our tournament coverage. This time we go way up north, beyond Canada, all the way to Anchorage, Alaska for Battle Zone Ursa 2018. Quick look at your top eight. Looks something like this. Mark Winter, what an appropriate last name for this event, with Space Wolves. He came in eighth. John Miller with Blood Angels comes in seventh. Adam Wudowski with Adeptus Astartes. Derek Massey with Cabal of Flayed Skull in fifth place. In fourth place, Tim Hubischer with Astra Militarum. Third place, Rob Porter with Cult Mechanicus. Second place is Danny McDevitt with Harlequins. And your winner for 2018 Battle Zone Ursa is none other than Matthew Goodwin with Imperial Knights. So what does the winning Imperial Knight list look like? Wall of
time. I have three guesses.
See if you're correct. We should do is like Family Feud. Ready? How many Castellans do you think he has?
One.
How many? What's in his Imperial Guard detachment?
Two company commanders. Three infantry squads.
And he has two other knights in tow. What do you think those are?
Gallants.
Sorry. Ray for the steal. What other knights do you think has in this list?
A crusader.
You're ding, 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 and a give you a hint. Prince, famous comic book strip from the '70s.
And you think I would know something like that?
Yes, of course you do. You're knowledgeable of all things ancient. So Prince Valiant. So yes, you have a Knight Valiant in there.
Never even heard of that before. Never even heard of that character.
It was my dad's favorite growing up. Of course, back then they had to draw it on the cave walls. So anyway, that is your top list there. So yeah, Knight Castellan, Siegebreaker cannons and Cheesebreaker missiles, Knight Crusader with an Adventure Gatling gun, a rapid fire battle cannon, Knight Valiant with two Siegebreaker cannons, and as Don predicted, the aforementioned Imperial Guard battery, and then they also added in a Calexus assassin for fun. Moving down to second place, Danny McDevitt with Harlequins. Here, once again, you want to predict what's in the list?
Triple bikes and Black Legion. Or not Black Legion. Black Heart. that one. The other black guys.
Close. There's one. So you're also right on the triple bikes. Three units of five with Haywires and Zephyr Glaives. You end up going with a Spearhead of Prophet of the Flesh with three units of two Talos and Urian Rakath. And then he took, of course, the Craft World Battalion. This time he took Ulathay, Warlock Skyrunner, Farseer Skyrunner, and two units of Rangers. And this is where he got a little wacky. 16 Guardian Defenders with a heavy weapons platform.
That makes perfect sense for why I picked Ulathay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Discipline of the Black Guardians or whatever makes him BS2.
And don't they also get Feel No Pain on 6-up, right?
Yes. So they get that, you do strike them in, you do that, you protect them, and that's the other reason why you put the weapons platform in there, is to give them a 2-up armor save and a 3-up invul save when you pop Shield of Guardians or whatever it's called. That stratagem. And it's a lot of shuriken catapults firing at you.
So there you go. That is how you win there. Third place, Rob Porter with Cult Mechanicus. Let's see what we got here. Again, don't hear from this army too much, but unfortunately, it's the same list we've been talking about earlier in the show. Two Tech Priest Engineers, three units of five Skitarii. I should take it back. Two units of five Vanguards, one unit of five Rangers, three unit of 12 Electro Priests. And, oh, your favorite, Don. I was wondering why you took three of them instead of two blobs. Three Terex Pattern Assault Drills.
Ah, that fits in 12 per.
Then took second attachment, also Stygies. Oh, that's the previous one, my mistake. Second thing he took was an allied Astra Militarum list. Includes Company Commander, Primaris Psyker, two units of 10 Guardsmen, five units of Tempestus Scions. And then he also added in a Knight Castellan with House Raven.
Makes sense. Raven Castellans do what Raven Castellans do.
I think it's interesting with the Scions, because they can teleport in, right?
Yeah, they have the ability to deep strike with their grav shoots.
So they drop in, and they get these three drills coming up in your face. Yeah, that could be a rough couple turns.
The best part about those drills is they don't even deep strike with that list. You just infiltrate them in with Stygies.
I didn't think of it that way. So the Canadian, they're basically like Alpha Legion, where they just kind of set up on turn one?
Yep, but unlike Alpha Legion and Raven Guard, they don't say infantry. It says Stygies 8 unit. So it works on their drills, too.
Ew. That could be a rude awakening. Talk about a gotcha moment.
Yep. On a side note, one of the things I do want to mention is I love this team name. It looks like it's a shout-out to one of the guys that I play with every once in a while over in California, James Carmona.
What if you saw that?
The team name is called Tactically Perfect, which he's known, especially in our area, for one of the podcasts that he guest starred on, where he was talking about you can have the worst dice in the world and roll horribly, but as long as you play Tactically Perfect, sometimes it messes you up, but make sure you always play Tactically Perfect. So I'm curious if that's where they got the name from. It made me giggle a little bit when I saw it.
I saw that too. It's pretty funny. All right. I look forward to this event every year, not because I like the area of Oklahoma, not because it's a great event, which it is, by the way, but it's got the coolest name in all of 40K. Yes, folks, I am talking about the Slobberknocker GT. So your top eight for this year's Slobberknocker is, starting in eighth place, Antonio Sedano with Nicolac. Seventh place with Michael Keyes with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, John Cook with Space Wolves. Fifth place, Tony Graber with High Fleet Behemoth. Fourth place, Andy Cull with Imperial Knights. Third place, Dalton Townsend with Drukhari. Second place, Joe Beto with Imperial Knights. And your top player, here's a faction we haven't talked to at all tonight, Ben Neal with Tau Empire. How does Tau Empire get to the top spot?
Wait, Tau aren't supposed to win. They obviously weren't playing IGC.
Obviously not.
Because Reese has said that he destroys Tau by not allowing them to win GTs.
Pulls the strings to make them work. It's a quick look to see how this is. Battalion of Tau Set. So that's the Overwatch on the 5-up, right?
Yes.
All right. So he's got a commander in a regular crisis suit with four cyclic ion blasters and Dark Strider. Rounds it out with three strike teams of five with pulse rifles. A looks like a three-man unit of Pathfinders with rail rifles. A unit of 12 shield drones. Zips down to a second battalion, also Tau Set. It's got a Cadre Fireblade and a commander in an Enforcer battle suit. I believe that's the one of those four-jeweled ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a drone controller and three fusion blasters on that one. It also adds an Ethereal to the party. And then adds another one, two, three units of five Strike Team Fire Warriors. Also in a Riptide with Smart Missile System, Advanced Targeting System, Heavy Burst Cannon, and Velocity Tractor. Then he has a Spearhead, also Tau Sept, Commander Shadow Sun, two Fire Sight Marksmen, and looks like three units of five Sniper Drones, and then one unit of three Broadside Suits.
I'm looking at their National Mission Pack right now. Since their scores didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, it looks like they're using the old IDC missions, the ones that came out at the start of 8th edition. So that's interesting.
Were those the ones who were still rolling three dice and choosing?
Actually, no, they're doing like a mix of a whole bunch of different missions. There's one that's like pure kill points. There's one that's that first ITC mission. They have the relic. Ugh. Let's see. What's this next one? The Great Bacon War? What the heck is this?
Why are we warring over bacon? Anthem. There's enough for everyone.
No, there's never enough bacon. All right, it looks like they're just using a couple of the ITC beginning 8th edition missions. And then there's like a couple custom scenarios, and there's a couple that are straight out of the rulebook for Eternal War. But it looks like they all were scored on a 0 to 20 system, it looks like. Because the highest scores I'm seeing are 20s.
Well, looking at this list here, I'm trying to figure out how this all works together. I mean, obviously the Fireside Commander, so you got a lot of Markalites. He took out most of the Markalites on the Pathfinder team for the rail rifles to get that heavier shots. But I'm kind of figuring out why only three at that point.
You're only allowed three.
Only allowed three rail rifles. Okay. And then the 12 shield drones, he's going to scatter those up to protect all his other units. That makes sense. The commander ones make sense. All the Riptide makes sense. Interesting with Shadow Sun with the broadside suits. I think they're traveling together, and she's using her leadership buff to give them extra accuracy, or what's going on there?
I don't think she does anything for the broadsides. Except for she's allowed to use the Kyune again, which allows them to move and shoot without penalty, if I remember right. So up to two turns of that.
I'm trying to remember what her leadership drone does. I forgot that does. Anyway, I want to say it gives them a +1 to hit. But
so the one thing that I can definitely see as far as them doing well at this event is it looks like there was a lot of knights still. Probably some big bug Tyranids too, from what I'm seeing. And Tau have a wonderful stratagem where as soon as they put one wound through, everything else gets +1 to wound against that target. So you get all those strength 6 AP 4 rare rifles that do extra like mortal wounds or something, whatever on sixes. And you can beat knights to heck with that.
Well, I can tell you, looking at the second place finisher, he has an Imperial Knightless, your standard fare. He added two Armature Helverins to go with his Castellan and then the Guard Command Battery, so no surprise there. Fourth place, you've got another Imperial Knight player. Seventh place, another Imperial Knight player. 10th place, another Imperial Knight player, so you're probably right. He brought the scissors to the paper fight. So
paper is fine. Please nerf rock. Sincerely, scissors.
That's right. Just looking ahead, here's any other lists of note. Nope. These are all pretty much the same old, same old. Do you want to look at the Space Wolf list just for fun?
Sure.
So one list, we talked a lot about the Codex a couple weeks ago, but let's take a look at what a winning list looks like. So first of all, whoever loaded this up, loaded it upside down. This should be fun to read. All right. Starts with the Space Wolf starts with an Imperial Guard command, the typical command point battery that we've been talking about all night. And the other half of it's cut off. Okay, we're going to have to skip that part. Sorry, guys. There'll be no Space Wolf discussion this week.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Move on to the next one. That's what editing's for. All right. Our next event, a popular event in the California area, and it brought out several of the top players from the West Coast. Dice Hammered Warhammer GT in Lake Forest, California. Quick rundown of your top eight there, and you'll recognize several of these names. In eighth place, Mark Carrion with Imperial Knights. Seventh place, Seth Barakowski with Astra Militarum. Sixth place, Raymond Almuda with El Latoc. Fifth place, Cooper Waddell with High Fleet Kraken. Fourth place, Trevor Sandoval with Imperial Knights. Third place, Richard Cozart with Chaos Demons. Second place, Alan Hernandez with Harlequins. And tactically perfect at the top spot, James Carmona with Alpha Legion. So let's take a look at James's list, a little bit of a modification from when he used to run. Starts off with a battalion of Chaos Space Marines, all Alpha Legion. Features an Exalted Champion and a Sorcerer. Three units of Cultists, two size 10, the other one size 35. A 15-man unit of Noise Marines. Rounds out a second battalion, this one of Thousand Suns, featuring Ahriman and a Demon Prince of Zeech. Two units of 10 Cultists, and then a unit of 27 Zangors. And finally, he rounds it out with a third detachment of Chaos Demons that features a Demon Prince of Chaos, Skull Taker, and then three units of 15 Bloodletters. So no more Abaddon to buff all his cultists, but quite a few new toys in there.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when he goes up against one of the people from Arizona.
Well, it's interesting with the Noise Marines. I know his big tactic with that is he's got the big battery. He added two Blastmasters this time around. Everybody else has got the Sonic Blaster. And the whole idea is he keeps playing that. Every time you kill one, they get to shoot again. But I'm trying to figure out as I go through the rest of this list, obviously the big cultist bombs, we know what they do. Huge screens, the Zangor bomb, same thing. Still kind of scratching my head, why three units of 15 Bloodletters? Why not two units of 20 and then one unit of 10. So you get the extra attack. And I'm trying to figure out where Skull Taker fits into all this.
I know one of the things that Skull Taker does with Bloodletters is he gives them plus one to hit. So even if they go down below their 20 man thing that gives them plus one to hit, Skull Taker still makes them hit on twos.
Interesting. Okay. That makes a lot of sense then. I still like Scarbrand better. I think this might be a little more elegant, but yeah, Scarbrand's a lot of fun. Moving on to second place, Alan Hernandez with allegedly Harlequins, but a little bit mixed match of Eldari soup. It starts off with looks like a battalion. Yes, it is. Part of it got cut off here. Starts off with a Fireseer, Skyrunner, Warlock Conclave. There's something you don't see every day of two Warlocks. And then finally, a Warlock Skyrunner. He has a 20-man blob of Guardian Defenders with a heavy weapon platform and two units of five Rangers. Of course, his obligatory unit of eight Shining Spears with Exarchs. Then the list gets a little janky to read here, so bear with me for a second. Looks like he has a Dark Drakari detachment of some kind or other, featuring it is Ravager and two Razorwing Jet Fighters. So clearly there must be another page because that's not legal. But it's hard to read at this point. And then he rounds it out with an Outrider detachment of Harlequins featuring Troopmaster, a Solitaire, and then three units of Skyweavers. Looks like two units of five on unit of two. Interesting that he went with Mask of the Frozen Stars to get the plus one attack.
Maybe he wanted a more innate bonus. Or maybe he just wanted to add more attacks for things like James's Hordes of Dudes. Looks like the guy below him also had Chaos Demons. Hordes of Dudes. Tyranids, Hordes of Dudes. It's just more attacks do help.
Yep. Now, it's interesting when you look at these scores. Both players went undefeated in this particular tournament. It's the first time we've had two undefeateds in a GT so far tonight. But you look at James' scores versus Alan's scores. James is rocking. So he goes 33, 34, 26, 40, and 32. Whereas Alan never breaks above 30 points. 28, 25, 26, 23, 28. Product of the play styles of the players? Or is that really what the armies do?
Well, no, Harlequins in general tend to not score high. Granted, it wasn't just Harlequins, but yeah, that compared to James Carmona has a very board presence list, so it just grabs objectives and gets points that way on top of the killing potential it has.
All right, looking over the rest here. All right, we have one more event to talk about, and this one near and dear to our hearts because it's one we ran this past weekend. So Catagen Won't Fall in lovely Glendale, Arizona. So reviewing our top eight from that particular event looks something like this. In eighth place is Clavin Clow with Ultramarines. Seventh place, Adam Baker with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, Aaron Weissman with Imperial Knights. Fifth place, Benjamin Jurek with Orcs. Fourth place, Troy Salowitzky with Nurgle Demons. Third place, this bum, Don Husen with Death Guard. Second place, Josh Jenny with Thousand Suns. And your winner with going a perfect 5-0. Danny Olivais with Inari. Now he made some changes to his list, so not the usual what he's been running the past few weeks. So I start with the Battalion of Eldar Craft Worlds. It starts with a Farseer Skyrunner, Spirit Seer, and a Warlock Skyrunner. 3 units of 5 Rangers and a Wave Serpent. I'm trying to look at here. It looks like he just made them crack. He said no. They're a mixed attachment. I'm trying to see which ones he took. It's not quite as clear who's what at this point. But okay, we'll move on. Then follows it up with a Spearhead Detachment of Aldari that features an Autok Skyrunner in Eve Rain. And then a unit of 5 Shining Spears. Followed up with 3 units of Dark Reapers, 1 unit of 8 and 2 units of 3. And a battalion, lastly, of Drukhari, also a mixed unit. I could have swore he was running them as Cabal the Black Art. But anyway, 2 units of Archons, 3 units of Cabalite Warriors, and all in 3 Venoms. So rather than us trying to decipher what he does with the list, I actually spoke with Daniel after the tournament. So give a quick listen to that, and we'll be back right after that interview.
We've just wrapped up with our lovely GT, and once again, Daniel Olivas takes it again, going a perfect 5-0. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little what's in your list.
So I'm running a fairly standard Unari list that does an axe standard. I run sort of a Reaper Castle, Dark Eldar Vect detachment, essentially, for Cabal Blackheart. Cabal Blackheart for Vect, but I run it naked, 3 Venoms, 3 naked Cavalry Squads, 2 Archons with just the Huskblades. And then I run Shining Spears, but only a 5-man unit. They're my backfield disruptor that generally go in deep strike. So I run a Castle Breakout list, and for some reason nobody ever sees the breakout coming, and it wins lots of games.
What did you mention there? We were talking a little bit beforehand that underestimate the shooting, overestimate the melee. So what's going on there?
Yeah, so the Shining Spears replaced what was originally Wraith Blades, but you know, I was depending on a 9 charge for them coming out of deep strike. So I replaced that with Swooping Hawks for extra shots, but I wasn't happy with how they performed, and I'm not happy with having to pin the toe of 10 models because they break. In one tournament, I broke 5, I think.
Oh, jeez.
And so I replaced it with 5 Shining Spears, and even though they can't shoot their spears the turn they drop in, they the 20 Shuriken shots out of 5 Shining Spears just work over backfield units. And people always are more afraid of the charge than they are of the range. And obviously, when you tri-point, you shoot one and charge a different unit, and I can generally get rid of 2 backfield units the turn I come in from deep strike.
Got it.
So it's a Swiss Army knife that I can, if I roll bad or my dice go one way or the other, and then because they can soul burst, even with the beta rules, yes, they can't soul burst move the turn they come down, but they can soul burst charge again, or they can soul burst fight again.
Right.
So if somebody has 2 units placed together, you can chain into another unit, or you just charge the other unit if you're not worried about that close combat. If it's guard or grots or something, and tie up another unit in combat. Cannons or tanks or whatever it happens to be. So
as you're talking, I have yet to hear the word stratagem. So it sounds to me like command points not really a concern for you.
I do not. I don't because I don't have any way to regen command points. I start with 14, so I have some to spend. I generally vec one thing in game, even if I don't need to, just because it makes my opponents mad, and that's always fun.
A little above the table tactic there.
A little bit of head games, right? Yeah. So I try to not be command point dependent. I like to have command points to bail me out of bad situations, but I try not to build a list that's command point dependent for 2 reasons. Vect, and you run out of command points. So I try to make sure that I can do everything I need to do to win a game without spending any command points. And then I view them as a bonus, essentially. So you learned that from Don, by the way.
Awesome. So we have 2 of our Arizona players here currently in the ITC top 10. So looking, we'll have to do the math to see where you bounce up from this past weekend.
But I think I'm an 11th right now.
Okay.
So I think I bumped out of the top 10 after the Nova scores went in. But I think Don's in 10th. I think this score might bump him to 11. We might switch places.
We'll switch places.
But yeah, two guys from Arizona, top 11, and Arizona 2-for-2 on California Majors this year.
Very nice.
And then obviously we're going to SoCal trying to make that 3-for-3.
Okay.
We'd like to take all 3 California Majors Arizona flags. I'm going to bring an Arizona flag to SoCal. Drape myself in it if I win it. So
2 interesting matchups this weekend. First of all, last game of the night for the championship. Orcs. What's up with that? Index Army for the championship?
Yeah, so he built an Orc Army that's really good at killing knights, actually. My army also really good at killing knights. And so it was an interesting game. We rolled up Vanguard deployment. That would not have been fun because I would have just shooting gallered him. So we re-rolled it, and we rolled up table quarters.
Okay.
So it didn't get much better, but at least I didn't have cover because it switched the corners. And then, he does a really good job piling that list. Orcs are crazy because with the 5-up invuln from the mech guy and then the 5-up funeral paint, if he gets hot, you know, he can keep those big squads alive. He had a little bit of bad luck, you know. If he could have mobbed up one time, it would have made a big difference, but he had 11 or 12 guys left in the small unit. I didn't quite knock it down enough, so he wasn't eligible to mob up, so it made long charges. And the running joke with Ben, who's a great guy and a great player, is he just only rerolls ones to ones with CPs. Mm-hmm. And last month at this event, he lost a shield captain to poison on the charge because he rolled a one. Right. The only one we left, rolled a one to save, rerolled it to a one. And this... starting this game, at least the first seven or eight times he CP rerolled a one, he rerolled it to a one. So he's, if you heard me laughing, that's, I wasn't laughing at him.
Right.
It just got absurd how often he was rolling ones to ones. And it's just a fun army. I love orcs. I like how they play. I love how they look. Mm-hmm. Mentally painted, they still look good. And it was a really fun game. Just, my list just buckets people off the board. So, it, you know, for me, I have so many shots.
So I got to give you a little bit of crap. Two tournaments in a row, round one, your biggest struggle. What's going on here?
So a little bit, unfortunately, people, you know, will say, hey, take it easy on so-and-so because he's newer or, okay, you know, more of a casual player. And if you've ever watched me play, I have a bad habit of coaching against myself. So I will oftentimes tell the person how to beat me, and I will help them. If you ask me, hey, what should I do here? I will tell you what's worst case for me. And I've got to stop doing that because obviously at majors and stuff, that's a big detriment. So I've got to stop being so friendly in some situations because I really do want the scene to get better. I'm all about promoting the hobby. You know, I love playing on stream, but I'd rather play 10 games that get new guys into the hobby than win a major, honestly. Because if we get 10 more guys in, that's just better for everybody. So I really try to teach as much as I can. And unfortunately, sometimes in tournaments, and again, this happened last week, right, or last month, and it happened this month where I sort of taught, had to listen to me and you'll beat me. And the funniest thing about that, and we've talked about this before, right, is people think I'm lying or setting a trap for them, and then they'll do the opposite, thinking, oh, no, he's trying to trick me. And then they're like, oh, wait, I really should have done what you said. And I'm like, yeah, I told you.
Right.
So it's kind of funny.
It's pretty funny. Last question, FAQ, any minute now. What are you hoping to see?
The CP farms need to go away. They're just bad for the game. You know, I've heard lots of ideas to fix it. Any fix is good. They're bad for the game because it makes stratagems just candy. Like, they're just as many as you want, and only really if you're Imperial, right? Because nobody else has that ridiculous stacking CP regeneration. And I'm pretty confident they're going to do something to address that. Other than that, I actually think the game's in a pretty good place. I think the Orc Codex is going to change what's going on the table right now. I think Knights are actually not as powerful as people think. I think it's just an easy way for a really good player to place well. And so when you have that many people running the same or very similar lists, of course they're going to win tournaments because half the time they're playing each other. You know, the top eight is six Knights players. Well, of course, you know, the chances are they're going to win. It's sort of like Yanari being that way, that a good player running Yanari is tough to beat. Similarly, the difference is with Yanari, if you make a mistake and your opponent sees it, you're done because it'll fail cascade on you. Whereas Knights, because of all their CP, you know, the Knights, Blood Angels, Guard thing. It's just built-in redundancy on, like, oh, I screwed up. Who cares? I got another Blood Angels captain coming out of reserve, so who gives a crap? So I think we'll see that change, and I think that'll really shake it up. And then in combination with Orcs and the CP farm changes, I think that'll – and the hobby will be in a better place for it. So.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Daniel's list, right from the horse's mouth, and we'll be seeing him at the SoCal Open. Follow that up with Josh Jenny. He was actually in first place, perfect 3, now going into day one, had a bit of a stumble in his fourth game, so able to rebound nicely for a second place finish. Looking at his Thousand Suns list, starts off with a battalion of Chaos, comes with a Charge Master. Never leave home without it. No, a change caster is what I'm trying to say. And a Herald of Slaanesh. Follows that up with a gargantuan unit of 30 pink horrors. And then 2 units of 3 nurglings. Then adds a patrol of Death Guard. Featuring a sorcerer in Terminator armor. A unit of 10 cultists. And Don, he's still in your jam here. A unit of Blight Lord Terminators. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 of them. My goodness.
He has been a faithful student.
He's got 6 bubonic axes, 2 flails of corruption, 2 blight launchers with a bubonic axe, and the champion also has a bubonic axe with a combi bolter. And then he rounds it out with a battalion of Thousand Suns. featuring Araban, Demon Prince of Zeech, a sorcerer, a chaos cultist unit of 10, two units of 28 Zangors. So I saw a couple glimpses of this list on the table. How does this work?
Loads of board presence once more. With Thousand Suns, you're able to do a lot of first turn shenanigans. Pink Horrors shoot a lot, so there's definitely that. And then the Blightlord Terminators are just an immovable object wherever you put them. And they will kill pretty much anything that they touch, unless it's a Imperial Knight, and then it'll take a couple turns, and then they'll kill it eventually before it kills them. That's just how they work.
I'm just going to jump to one other list. I want to give a quick shout out to Benjamin Jurek. Yes, he came in fifth, but he was on top table and with a chance to win on the last round of the tournament with Index Orcs, folks. What does that list look like? It's pretty punishing. Starts off with a battalion of Orcs. A whole lot of options at this point. Featuring Ghazghoul Thraka, and then a Big Mech, and then in the troop choices, he's got a unit of 10 boys, and then two units of 30 boys, each bossed out with Power Claw and Slugga. I'm going to have fun with these orc lists when they finally come out. Then he runs out a unit of commandos, looks like the minimum five-man squad, and then a pain boy, and then mech guns up the wazoo. He's got 3, 4, 5 custom mega cannons. Then brings in a second battalion of orcs, featuring a big mech, war boss, a unit of 28 boys with shooters, a unit of 30 with sluggas and choppas, and a second unit of 30 with sluggas and choppas. And then another pain boy in that detachment, and then he rounds that out with a supreme command detachment of 3 weird boys. So I did get to see this in action. It was quite brutal. Between the jump and a few other shenanigans, he is in your face very quickly and just keeps you in your deployment zone as the in anything not in combat is getting blown away by custom mega cannons.
I think it'll be interesting to see what he does with the list after the Codex comes out, since I know it does definitely revolve a lot around Ghazghoul, which is a Goth. But it sounds like Goss might not have the best trait.
Yeah, I actually talked to him a little bit after the game. So one of the things that really makes this list really go, though, is the weird boys, because they were able to... That was what he uses to take out knights and the bigger stuff, just with smite spam. But he's thinking Blood Axis is where he's going to go once the Codex starts. He feels they're the strongest. And so, yeah, Ghazghoul might come out and then move on from there. And I still have to wrap my head around all those clans, don't know much about them. And of course, we're assuming he said the same thing. He's assuming the rumors are true.
The thing is, even with all the clan traits, orcs are still going to all play the exact same way. People don't play orcs to run, for lack of a better term, they don't use it to run 30 mega knobs and 3 war bosses. It's not what happens. There's still going to be hordes of boys, a couple grot guns in the back, maybe a couple flyers, but it's all basically going to be the exact same tactic. They won't do anything jinxy or weird. It's not like going from Thousand Suns to Death Guard to Alpha Legion, where those things just play completely different. Or even like the Chaos Demons Codex, where you go from Nurgle versus Tzeentch versus Khorne, or even like Dark Eldar. What is a Cavalite list look like compared to a Witch Cult list, compared to a Coven's list? It's all going to play the exact same way. Just a couple variations in units.
So, Don, I skipped over your list in third place. Did you want to talk about what you brought?
So, it was me testing out a few of the new units that I picked up and a couple fillers. It was a Spearhead and a Vanguard. Yeah, that's the right word. With a Chaos Lord, Power Fist, Comic Bolter, a Lord of Contagion with the Plague Reaper, 3 Contemptors with the Contemptor Chain Claws and double Soul Burners, 3 Derridaeos with the Butcher Cannon Arrays, twin Heavy Bolters, and Greater Havoc Launchers, and 3 Plagueburst Crawlers. The Derridaeos, they shone so bright how much damage they can put out. They hands down killed 90% of my opponent's army in every game. They were just that crazy with how much Daka they can put out. And for those of you that don't know what a Grave or Havoc Launcher is, it's 3d3 shots at 4 feet of strength 6, AP 1, 1 damage that ignore line of sight. Those were the breadwinners of the entire list. Those alone did so much work.
So Don and I got to play each other in round 5, and I got to experience that firsthand. And yeah, there's a lot of surprises in that list. In terms of just overall firepower, I think the thing that will probably catch most people off guard is, I believe it was the Derridaeos, or the Doritos, as we were calling them, have a ballistic skill of 2. And then they've got that additional ability where they don't move and get some sort of bonus against fly targets. I can't remember the exact ruling.
They get the plus 1 to hit against fly vehicles, which means that, like, in our game, there was a Void Raven bomber that was flying by, and I basically went back to hitting it on 2s. It just can't do it 2 consecutive turns, but it can do it turn 1, turn 3, turn 5, or turn 2, turn 4, turn 6, whichever way you want to do it. But the other part of that is they're all heavy weapons, so with those dreadnoughts, they normally get minus 1 to hit if they move. They have the Hellbrook keyword, so they get the Death Guard trait of Inexorable Advance, which allows them to move and shoot heavy weapons without the negatives to hit. So that comes into play a lot.
Yeah, it did come a lot, because that was something where, with so few models you had on the table, I was like, oh, I should be able to get them on board presence. So when I was taking secondaries, I took mostly a lot of the... anything that allowed me to, you know, I had behind enemy lines, I had ground control, so I was ready to spread the field. And unfortunately, that kind of means that you had to be super precise with the few attacks that I had, and I was anything but. So, but we can talk about that after the break in terms of what our takeaways from this past tournament. See you guys right after the break. And we are back. So just a quick roundup, as Don and I were playing TOs at this particular event and kind of talking over with Ray as we're planning some of our next couple events for the next for the rest of the year, as well as already into next year. We'll have some announcements on that later in the show. But first takeaway, I will say, as a from a TO standpoint, number one, chest clocks both days. We tried to be nice and go, we'll only do chest clocks on day 2 if you have a winning record. No way. Never going to do that again. As a matter of fact, I ordered 5 more chest clocks. That gives me 15, so it's enough for 30 players. That should cover most of our small to mid-sized tournaments. Definitely, you know, that whole idea is, okay, only the winning records will get it. Well, some people got a winning record for dragging their feet. So we can't have that moving forward. So definitely chest clocks moving every game from day 1. Don, your thoughts on that move?
I appreciate it, but I also know that I plan on doing well at the bigger events. I know it might sound a little arrogant, but at those bigger events, you are going to get put on chest clocks on that day 2 or whatnot, and I need to get practice with it. So I'm more than happy to do it all event long, as opposed to just, well, at the end, we'll figure it out.
Now, Ray, you had some experience with playing with a chest clock as well. You and I tried it out. Hearing that, how does that affect what you're going to do moving forward?
Honestly, it's not really going to affect anything. I've found that it's quite easily doable to, you know, play with a chest clock. You know, I'm not running some crazy amount of units and models in a list because, I mean, that's just going to slow things down anyway.
Yeah, second thing I learned also from this takeaway from a player standpoint is there are no bonus points for finishing early. So if you have a chest clock, manage your time. And it's okay if you go all the way down to the last minute. You were given those many points. So I was playing Don in the last round. Don's got 11 units, so he's going through his turns very, very quickly. And I felt like it was kind of like I got to keep up with him. Consequently, I made mistakes. 2 drastic ones. Turn 2, positioned my bikes in the wrong spot to do a charge, forgot to declare multi-charge. And what that would have done is I should have taken one of his models off an objective and put me in a position where I could then continue to move up the field and maybe take out a second unit. Instead, two units with one wound each took out, probably three of my bikes that turn, as well as another one of my raiders. So that was, not only was that a, so what that looks like, turn two, it went from, we were tied on objectives, I could have had held more. So it's a 1 point loss there. Secondly, he not only killed two units with the, you know, he was able to kill that one unit with the guys that are supposed to be dead. He got kills elsewhere, so he actually got a kill more that third turn, so it became a 2 point swing. I further screwed it up. I measured the range, registered how far the model had to move, moved the unit, and was careless with it because I was in a hurry and I didn't want the model to jingle on the GW craters to have wobbly model syndrome. So his Dare Dreo, with one wound sitting in the back, was exactly 36.4 inches away from the disruptor. I was like, how did I screw that up? Once again, what happened? But granted, I could have rolled poorly and not have died, but let's assume it died. Once again, Don got kill more, and I don't even think I got a kill that turn because it was towards the end of the game. So it became another 2 point swing. Only lost this game by 3 or 4 points. So there it was. You know, so the good news is I had 20 minutes left on my clock when I lost. So yeah, use your time. If you're taking longer, opponent has nothing to gripe about. He's got all his time available to him. So that was my takeaway as a player. Breathe, use your time.
And as another takeaway, just as far as that one part where you're talking about your raider was trying to disintegrate the one wound Derradeo, the reason why I like those Derradeos so much, especially because of what they're able to do, is they can, with that one wound, lock their heels down with the helic targeting array. Even if they're at the bottom tier, they're still hitting on threes against most things with fly, or most fly vehicles, which Dark Eldar have a plethora of.
Yeah, I have a few. So, very frustrating, because I needed that win bad. That would have gotten me probably in the top five. Instead, I came in 10th. Boo. So, anyway. Trying to think anything else from that particular tournament stood out. Oh, we were also, as we were planning for other events, everybody pretty much knew their table pairings via phone. So that was kind of nice. I think the app has made its way to pretty much everybody.
Yeah, I don't really hear about anybody complaining that they don't have the app or anything. So
it used to be, I have to have the screen and or post it on the wall like you used to. Now it was, because I didn't have my laptop available to me this weekend. So it was strictly on the phone and the app, and it worked great. And not a single complaint, not one person asking me what table am I on. It worked out just fine. Matter of fact, the only issues we had is a couple people were having some difficulty uploading their lists. So it's pretty.
Yeah, I saw someone in one of the various Facebook groups even go so far this weekend as to do a little video to help guide people.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I should probably look at it. So overall, a great event. I want to thank everyone for coming. And we'll talk about our future events in a little bit. But first, it's that time of the night to talk about your ITC Top 10. So, a bit of a shakeups based on this weekend's activity. So right off the bat, we'll start at number 10 is Nick Gower with 617 points. With just 0.6 of a point lead, Danny Olivas, who won our event this past weekend, jumps back into 9th place. 8th place is Jeff Robinson at 620 points. Nick Rose also with 620.5 points, so a slim lead over Jeff Robinson for 7th place. Joshua Death continues his death spiral down. See what I did there? At 644 points. Archon Skari jumps up to 5th place with 650 points. Matt Rutt, 691 points, finds himself in 4th place. Trent Northington just edges out Matt for third place by 1 point. Mike Porter is sitting in second place, a brief run at the top with 721 points, which means your top ITC player for this week is none other than Nick Nadavati with 755 points over five events. So, Don, you're just lurking right below the top 10 there. And you mentioned you are going to SoCal, so it should be easy to make up some points there and get you back into the top 10.
Yep, I'm sure that I will get enough points to replace the score, but there will be a lot of other people there, some of which I do believe are in that top 10 area. So it won't be terribly easy to get up there, but I'm hoping I win it. But expectations are hopefully top 10.
Yep. Just to give you an idea, some pretty big names here in this particular list. So starting at number 11, you got Don Husen at 616. Stephen Pamprin, you may have heard that name before. He's on the Canadian ETC team at 596. Mitch Pelham, who we've talked about several times about his Hellhound list, at 593. Matt Evans at 589. Alex McDougall at 589 as well. TJ Lanigan, who was a perennial top 10 player from last year, at 588. Richard Cozart, we talked about him this past weekend, was in hot action, 586. John Lennon came out with a big win this weekend as well. He's in 18th place. Matthew Ali, you might recognize him from the Dallas GT, he's sitting in 19th place. And then 10th place, Andrew Gagneau, a ETC veteran of many years. So we've got some still really big name players who can easily lump back into the top 10. So as we mentioned, busy weekend of tournament play. Ray, what do we have for next week?
Well, we've got the 2018 Battle Brothers Fall Cup in Regina, Saskatchewan. And then we've got the Harvester of Souls 2018. And that's at Spokane Valley, Washington.
Very cool. Don, we've got an event coming up in October.
Yeah, that we do. It's going to be on October 20th. And one of these days I'll remember the names I gave to said events. I believe it is the... why can't I remember how to use this thing correctly? There we go. The WA Outpost RTT, which is going to be in October on the 20th.
Very fitting for October. And one big announcement for us. I'm very excited about this. March 2nd and 3rd will be the Scorched Earth Open 2019. So we moved it up a few months. We used to be in May. We're moving up to March. We have a new venue. Very excited about this. It'll be at the Glendale Civic Center. So super excited about that. We'll be putting tickets on sale pretty soon. Definitely we have enough room for 60 players. We're hoping to make it a major at this point. One thing we'll definitely make it is a fantastic event. So now we have a facility that can really host and has experience running these types of events. So we're looking forward to that particular event. And so basically 4 weeks after LVO, start the season in style, coming down to Glendale, Arizona for the Scorched Earth Open. Gentlemen, I want to thank you tonight, and I want to thank you, the listeners, for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Once again, leave us a review on iTunes or hit us up on our Facebook page for any other questions that you may have for us we can answer during the show. Once again, my name's Eric.
I'm Don.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.